What up? Welcome back to another episode of the Dealer Talk Podcast. This is your host, Herb Anderson. And today we are going to have an amazing session. We're going to be talking to a very good friend of mine, somebody that I've known for years. I've consulted with this person in the past. And I'm very excited to share his perspective. We definitely had a raw, real, very relatable conversation, in my opinion. I'm just excited to have you all listen in. We're going to be looking at the manager's perspective, right? From desking principles to the current, landscape of the industry, to the shift that's occurring as far as, transition, right? As a veteran generation exits the industry and a younger generation, comes in. So definitely make sure to tune in. If you haven't done so, please make sure to share this podcast with somebody that can benefit from the information. If you like this episode, make sure to share this as well, so that they can take these insights and apply them to their day-to-day. All right. Without further ado, let's get into it. Let's check it out. Welcome to another episode of the Dealer Talk Podcast, Season 3, Episode 2. This is your host, Herb Anderson, and my co-host, Eric the Viking Nelson. What's up, Eric? How are you, buddy?
Hold on. Let's wait for the crowd to die down.
That's good, man. I like it.
Yeah, it's a privilege. It's a fantastic day, and well, it turns out I woke up breathing, but we get to do it again tomorrow, hopefully. So I'm a little anxious for that. But today was a great day, and I am absolutely looking forward to today's session.
Me too, man. So we tried to do this. We kind of did a little bit with Jay Jensen during season 2, but we never really dove deep. So I'm very excited to have the guest today and have this conversation finally. On the other side, right? Like the manager side of things. So I think it's going to be a good one, especially given the just the current state of the industry. Before we get into it, Eric, tell me a little bit about your guys' process there, as far as, management support and some of the things that you guys do to help your folks or some of your pain points, if you will.
Yeah. So as far as, we're in a growth stage, which is fantastic. I presently am new to the chair, but I have full support of the owner, which is it's probably unfamiliar territory for a lot of folks, but they just he gives me free rein to do however, as long as I'm effective. That's really the at the end of the day, that's really the gist of it. As long as you're effective, then I guess you get to stay another day. But we, as far as a managerial standpoint, for our sales staff and for our staff in general, as a whole, we believe a whole lot in empowerment, meaning that we absolutely believe in allowing our people to fall down, per se. As long as we're within, an arm's length, that we're there to pick them up and dust them off and let's try it again. But let's try it again. We'll try it this way. What we learn, I'll be honest with you. It's a very exciting time in my life for not only myself, but the feedback I'm getting from the team has been very, very positive. So, brother, it's rocking and rolling. I don't know. It's a gift. It's a gift, dude.
Yeah, I like that what you said about empowerment. And you said, I think it was in our first session that we did for season 3. You were talking about, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you said something that really caught my attention. And we got into the conversation, and I forgot about it, but. You said that your goal is to have the customers come in and not even know that the person they're dealing with, is not one of the managers, right? That's how much decision authority you want your team to have.
Yeah.
Do you think that's viable in our industry?
I really do. Only for fact is that, you know, the hierarchy. I think in order to be effective as a team, I don't necessarily need, I don't think there's any advantage to, other than decision making, that it's at the critical mass. I think that the lower down the chain, the food chain, the line of command, I guess is what you want to say, the lower I can get the decisions made effectively, the better off our team is. So we believe a whole lot in, you know, just letting our folks make decisions at ground floor levels or where we don't necessarily have to be involved. And we'd love to have a lot of communication where we can talk about why is it you decided to do this and that and whatnot. So, I mean, it's been effective for us. And, you know, moving forward, hopefully it continues to do so.
Yeah, man, I totally agree. I think that would be – it's definitely would allow for a different experience, I think, which is ultimately what, you know, what we should be doing in this day and age for sure. So
listen, let's be clear though. I don't know what the hell I'm doing, man, but the guy we got coming in right now live, okay, this dude that's waiting very, very patiently, not saying nothing, okay, this is the dude we need to be talking to, because this is the guy that knows. He knows more so than I do, and I'm leaning forward. I got my notepad in here. Check it out. Look, can you hear this? Yeah, that's me clicking my pen. Wow, I'm ready, man. Let's make some notes. Let's get it on.
Clicking away. That's awesome.
All right, man. So let's just get into it, dude. So the guest for today is the one, the only, Mr. Shane Edwards. Shane, what's up, dude? How are you, man?
Great. Fantastic. How are you guys?
Oh, man, I'm doing amazing.
Very, very well.
Yeah, so first question I always ask, just to kind of set things up, is give us a little bit of your background for the audience.
Okay, yeah. So I got into the car business back in 92. I wasn't quite 20 years old yet. That decision was kind of at the advice of my mother, who at the time was very successful in real estate. I wanted to, you know, have similar success and make good money. And she just felt at the time I was a little too young for that business, and suggested I try auto sales. And so I ended up just kind of looking in the newspaper at the time. That's where you would go back then to look for employment opportunities. And at the time I was living with my grandparents. And I borrowed my grandfather, long retired. I borrowed one of his suits. I had the big old tie and the plaid, you know, the whole getup. walked down there and at the dealership and went in and asked for a job, and that's how it all got started for me, you know. And it was a straight selling store, and they called me the kid. Back then, there wasn't very many young salespeople in a lot of dealerships. It was more of a, say, a more mature workforce. And I think the next person in line to my age, it was about 36 years old, and there was, you know, about 20 salespeople. So I literally was the kid. And yeah, so that's how it started a long time ago.
What about, you know, tell us about your trajectory. So obviously sales, and, you know, what other positions have you done?
So I've worn most every hat over the years, a couple times. I would sell, you know, basically in a straight selling situation, meaning that I went A to Z from, you know, from cradle to grave, did that for 3 years. And then there was a big major management change, and they changed the whole entire approach. They turned it into what back then we referred to as a systems house or a TO store. So it was liner closer. And I had been doing it for about 3 years, pretty successful for, you know, for my tenure up to that point. And I ended up being a liner for about 3 months. But after having to chase down a few customers at the closer failed to close my deals and turned them around and closed them, they made me a closer. So I would go on to do that quite a bit. Ended up going into special finance after a couple more years of doing that. And worked my way into a regular finance position. Then eventually on the desk. By 1998, I was on the desk. And I've been a used car manager, new car manager, general sales manager. You know, I've pretty much worn every hat over the years. Currently, I'm a sales manager for a large dealership in Salt Lake City area.
Right on, man. Yeah, so definitely some experience there for sure. So kind of want to kick things off with the current state of things, right? So there's a lot of, I'm very hesitant to be kind of like the doom and gloom sort of approach to, you know, to the automotive industry, because I always think that there's opportunities. But, you know, during my conversations, there's definitely some, you know, a little bit of unevenness, if you will. And, you know, just kind of want to get your perspective on, you know, where we are today with, in particular with new cars and, you know, kind of the contraction that we're seeing and, you know, what your perspective is on it. Is that affecting your business? Are you guys actually taking this opportunity to, you know, to kind of grow from it? Or, you know, is it just business as usual for you guys currently?
I don't know. I'm often asked because, you know, I got into the business before the internet. You know, I mean, it was around, but not very commonplace. It was dial up and only a handful of people really you'd run into had it. And so, I mean, I was working deals, you know, or my desk at the time was using a GMAT calculator. They had a, you know, stock cards, kind of like index cards for the inventory. So, you know, dealing with a customer that would go from lot to lot to lot, trying to find the best deal, best price, you know, you really had to be a salesman or salesperson, I should say, back then. It took just downright salesmanship to make a living back then. You know, you didn't. Nowadays, the consumer, you know, has so much data, you know, in the palm of their hands. They'll be shopping and comparing, you know, your offer to a competitor, you know, as we're negotiating right there in the showroom floor. I mean, they have the knowledge and the information. They're empowered to, you know, I guess, be able to negotiate on a little bit more even terms. And I'm often asked, you know, was it easier back when, you know, before all the internet and before all the information was so widely available to the consumer? And yeah, I actually think it was harder. You know, I'd much rather prefer to negotiate over facts. You know, it's just you can have some credibility as long as you're, you know, utilizing the data to your advantage and you can interpret it. I think that's probably the biggest battle we have is, you know, being able to convey a proper interpretation of the data to the consumer. You know, they're not experts, and, you know, they're getting a litany of information, you know, from all kinds of different sources or resources on the internet, you know, all giving them advice, and they're doing the best they can, doing their due diligence, try to save as much money as possible, transact a deal. And my job is to make them feel comfortable with the data, understand it, and know that they're being treated fairly, you know? And so I don't know, over the, to just answer question, I love where the business is at now. I mean, I've embraced it. I embraced it early on. You know, I definitely, I found it, I don't know, it's just, to me, it was a lot easier to navigate facts than, you know, than try to wade through the, you know, deciphering the fiction from nonfiction with the customer. It's just, yeah, I think this is a fun industry. And yeah, I like where we're at. I'm not sure if I completely understand what your question or what you're getting at.
Well, I think it's curious that we use the terminology doom and gloom. I don't know necessarily that doom and gloom is the right approach, because, you know, this business especially, and thank God, because it's the only reason why it's kept me in for as long as it has. It's just always in flux. We have to be cognizant of the change and be willing to adapt to the change. I think the customer has not changed. You hit the nail right on the head. They're trying to save as much money as possible, and we're just trying to get as much money as possible. I think maybe the only thing that that might be slightly altered is, you know, we just have to be a little bit better at removing the friction, right? We at the end of the day, they're looking for a car and we got it. I mean, we're just trying to implement the least amount of friction possible for them to acquire that. So, my question for you is this, is that how big a store is your store? You're at a Honda store, correct?
Yeah. We do in between, you know, 200 on a slow month, 250, you know, on
a
good month.
Yeah, that's a good store.
Usually somewhere in between.
And then how many sales staff you have? Like probably 20 or how many sales staff?
We got 24 at the moment.
Yeah, 24. So with all the different hats that you've worn at the dealerships, what's your favorite hat?
You know, that's a good question. You know, I am the type of person, you know, that I'm more probably money driven than title, if you will. So I absolutely have an absolute joy and passion for every position I've been in. I'll say if there was one position where I have mixed feelings about, probably be finance, me personally, you know.
That you liked it so much or you didn't like it so much?
I liked it at the time, I think. You know, now I was in finance. The last time I was in finance, I think Dealer Track and Cuddle was just starting to come on, you know, line and
yeah.
It was, I mean, those tools were in the infancy at the time.
That's like 05, 06 or something.
No, actually it was about, '02 was my last go at finance. I had about a 7 months. It was actually 2003. It was about 7 months in. Yeah. And so we were, this is up in the Washington State area. And so we had Cuddle was brand new, Route 1, and you know, Dealer Track was new. And anyway, but I only had a brief moment utilizing that technology. I remember how exciting it was because prior to that, I'd been faxing all my deals to banks and waiting for a phone call and or having to rehash, you know, every deal. And, you know, times were a little different. So, but as far as what role, I don't know. I love being in front of the customer, belly to belly, you know. I love the art of making a deal, you know? And so I have that luxury as a sales manager. I have the luxury to wear all the hats, you know? So, I mean, I can go from a salesperson to a closer, even F&I, you know, as a sales manager, it's not, you're not just, you know, strapped to a chair, you know, at least I'm not. I'm mobile and I'm involved in everything throughout the day and, you know. So I guess if there's any one position, maybe that's it. Maybe just on the desk, you know, just because I have the ability to do any of the jobs or any of the roles that I choose, you know?
Yeah, I love that. That's a great answer. So, I mean, and we want to be very cognizant of, I know I want this message. I want you to be able to talk to our listeners. Let me bottom line you. Do you believe that there is a change upon us in the industry today?
Well, I always tell people the one thing that's consistent in the car business is change. I mean, you know, my first sales manager, I remember him, you know, I don't know how long I'd been in the business, just a few months. I was young and I remember him standing and doing a training during a sales meeting, Saturday morning sales meeting, and him talking about these things never change. The businesses never change, you know. And it's funny. And that was what, 92. So, and ever since it has done nothing but change.
I like that.
But I've enjoyed it. It's been an awesome ride. You know, I'm still just at the midway point of my career. You know, I'm excited about what's going to change next. I don't fear any changes upon us. If, you know, I definitely have a optimistic outlook on the business. I think it's healthy and as vibrant as ever. And I think it's going to continue to grow and change. And those of us who embrace it and learn to navigate, you know, whatever obstacles might lie in the future, you know, we're going to do well and continue to enjoy, you know, success. And those who fight it, those who resist it, you know, they'll probably just go away. So, that's just, you know, that's my attitude.
Yeah, that's it's the correct attitude. I mean, as a desk guy, what do you think your primary role is? What is your A number one goal each day? What are you most responsible for?
So facilitating, you know, deals. I mean, the desk is kind of at least, I mean, because every dealership, every operation, I mean, some responsibilities can vary. You have a, you know, some stores that run strictly a desk manager, you know, he doesn't have any other thing to worry about other than making deals. And, you know, some stores have it set up to where the desk manager is also part-time used car manager, part-time new car manager. You know, he's responsible for a lot more than just desking deals. So at my current situation, I'm probably 90% desk. You know, I do my own dealer trades and, but really my primary role currently is getting involved on the floor, meeting as many customers as possible, and, you know, making as many deals and as much money as possible. It's just, I don't know, that's probably at the core of it, is just you got to generate income. That's just, and you're leading it. You're at the helm. You know, it's.
What do you think that the current age range of your sales staff, has that changed at all? Let me ask you that. I mean, do you have more older sales staff now? Do you have more younger sales staff now than you're used to? I mean, what's the current average median age range right now?
Yeah, I think it's definitely lowered over the years.
Okay.
So okay. In my opinion, yeah, I think like I said, when I first got in, I was 19 and they referred to me as a kid, and then
right.
The next line was 36. Now that might've been somewhat my situation for the first 3 or 4 years, but you know, even at the dealerships I would go on to work at, it seemed like the lion's share of the staff was, you know, 30s, 40s, you know, maybe even 50s. But now, you know, most stores, you know, maybe they got 3 or 4. You know, I'm sure there's some exceptions out there, but you know, I think it's a much younger game. You know,
yeah, I'm sure out of 24 people, you have some phenomenal sales. I mean, you know, you always have the 3%, 2% rule, whatever you want to call it. You always have some standout salespeople. What do you believe to be the best way to retain the salespeople that's not so much indicative of how much they make, but what's the look, you can answer however you want it. That's not fair. What's the best way to retain great salespeople?
Well, I think the first and foremost, you got to care about them. I mean, you got to care more than just making deals, making money. You got to care about them, and they got to feel you care. You got to care as much about their success as they do. You know, and I'm not talking about, you know, telling them how to succeed, but actually getting out, rolling up your sleeves and showing them. I think that goes a long ways. With that said, I it can be a double-edged sword. You know, sometimes, especially with the younger generation, if you're out there doing everything for them, making it too easy for them, they have no incentive or no motivation to learn how to do it for themselves. But with that said, I think one of my golden rules, I'll never ask a salesperson to do something I'm not willing to get up and go out and do from time to time myself. If I'm telling the salesperson you got to go face the customer and offer a lot less than what the customer is already demanding, we show them. And I can just see deer eyes and the headlight look, and they got, you know, scared to death, go face the customer. I got to be willing to get up and go out and show them it can be done, keeping the customer in the seat, and we can move on and come to a good conclusion and make a deal, you know? So if they see me, you know, willing to do what I'm asking them to go do, I think it goes a long way to getting their respect, and they're more likely to follow your direction, which, you know, is going to lead to a much more successful experience, you know? So,
I totally agree with that, man. You got to lead by example, right? That's true leadership right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of switching gears here a little bit. You said something earlier that kind of piqued my attention. You talked about the data, right? And I think that's so important because that is a differentiator in our time.
And so in your role, how do you prepare, you know, what do you do to prepare your, you know, the people that are interacting with the customer on a day-to-day basis to embrace that data, to embrace the fact that that customer has done 14 plus hours of research, that that customer knows a lot about that vehicle, you know, and that they're coming in, you know, prepared to debate and have those conversations.
Well, I believe if you're going to be successful in automotive retail sales, you got to be a first and foremost student of the industry. The customer is coming to you. You got to be a product expert. You know, you have to be a master of the process. I mean, you got to earn the customer's respect and trust as a competent salesperson. And I'll tell you, because they are much more educated and they're going to test you, you know, if you don't know your stuff, you know, they get the impression they know a lot more than you. You're going to have a lot of difficulties along the way. You're going to make your job a lot tougher, you know, than it needs to be. And in fact, that's what I think at the heart of why a lot of salespeople fail is just because they just resist the power of knowledge, just don't embrace the power of knowledge, and they just don't want to learn the industry, learn the product, and learn the process. And, you know, that's time and effort and energy, you know, you got to put into your education. You got to be able to educate yourself and spend a lot of time doing it outside of a dealership. If you're relying on a manager to, you know, during his daily, you know, daily sales meetings, if that's going to be the core of your education, you're going to have a tough time. You got to kind of take personal development. You got to take that very passionately, or approach it passionately, and you got to want to know more than the consumer.
Dude, I love that you say that, because I think that's key, right? I mean, I think a lot of times we wait for, and this is not in automotive, this is just in general, but a lot of times we wait for the companies we work for to, you know, give us all the tools and train us and do all this stuff. But we rarely talk about what are we going to do on our end to, you know, what kind of efforts are we making to, like you said, become students of our industry and, you know, take that initiative and be proactive. So I love that you say that. Do you guys do, you know, do you prep your sales team? Do you tell them, do you give them resources where they can go? And like, how do you like, if for somebody that's new, starting out in the business, you know, day one, like, how do you give them those tools? Like, what do you guys do to help them kind of get used to the way that things are today as far as data and all this information? Or do you try to keep them secluded from that so that they can just focus on, you know, following the steps of the sale and that sort of thing?
No, I'm a proponent of education. I believe that one's success is one's own responsibility. No one is going to care more about your success than you do. And as such,
or should anyway.
I personally, when I got in the business, you know, the sales managers would always say, stay stupid, you know, and I'm not that. I want my salesperson to be educated. I want them to be knowledgeable. I want them to be professional. And as such, I expect them to spend and devote some time, personal time, to their own personal development. I would have loved to have come up, you know, from the beginning, with so much information and so much education right in the palm of my hand. I mean, that is for free. I mean, I spend even after almost, well, I'm approaching about 26 years in the business now, I challenge any salesperson, you know, to prove to me they spend more time on their personal development than I do. I mean, I make sure that, you know, I live on YouTube. I'm always looking for the latest and greatest techniques. I try to stay current and up to date with some of the things that are out there. And, you know, the power of the internet, you know, provides that for me. And I definitely encourage my salespeople and provide them the direction they need to where they can go out and learn the techniques that is going to help them be more successful.
Right on, man. I love that you say that you challenge them, that you're more knowledgeable to prove to you that they're more knowledgeable than you are. That's awesome, man. It's a good example to set for sure. So let's talk about the challenges on your side of things, right? Because that's one of the things that I definitely wanted to make sure that we talked on this episode, right? Because we're always talking about, or up to this point in the podcast, we've been talking a lot about, the sales side of things and some of the challenges that they face and how they can overcome them. But I'm sure that, you know, you have your set of challenges as well on your side of things. So, talk to us a little bit about that and some of the ways, you know, kind of some leave behind for the audience of how to overcome those issues, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I have all solutions, but, I definitely have a lot of experience in trying to solve whatever the as you put, obstacles or challenges, right? The greatest challenge in a leadership position, in my opinion, is over the years, I see a great departure of independence. I came up in a time where we thrive, or we so badly wanted to be independent as young people. I mean, most in my age couldn't wait to get out of the house, get on their own, face the world, if you will. And nowadays, this current generation, they're in no hurry to leave the house. they don't mind having or being dependent. And as a result, that professional self-reliance is greatly lacking, I'd say, as on the whole. I see too many. Yeah, I came up in time when if I couldn't finish a deal on my own, the expectation is that I would give another salesperson. It was mandatory. I had to turn it to another salesperson. I don't remember in the initial years. I remember as a salesperson ever, or as a closer, having a sales manager go out and close a deal for me. Either I had to learn how to effectively do it on my own, or I was going to be splitting a lot of car deals. Today's expectation is that the sales manager goes out when the salesperson can't get it. So there's good and bad in that. The good is, the idea is that you got the best closer going out, and you're more likely to make the car deal and hold money in doing it. The bad is in the development. You just remove a great incentive or driver for them to learn how to do it on their own. It's so easy, to hit the easy button and have the guy who already knows how to do it go out and do it, I think that's probably at the core of all. I think a lot of managers out there would probably, echo my what I see as one of the greatest challenges, just motivating the sales staff to be able to do it on their own. We hire staff to make their phone calls. We actually have created a whole nother department within most sales departments to make sure that the follow-up is being done. It's just to me, it's amazing. I mean, back when I came up, if you weren't making your calls, then you weren't doing your job. Nowadays, the industry has given up on it, and we just hire additional staff to just make phone calls, because getting the salespeople to do it just wasn't working. I think the surge drive is an enormous opportunity. Here at our store, we're a Honda dealership, so we got a showroom floor full, or customer waiting area full of, oil changes, if you will, but we got a real loyal, customer who have owned 3, 4, 5 Hondas, so they love the brand, loyal to the brand. And we sell a lot off our service drive organically. It's not something we necessarily push. We don't have to. The customers are, right on the showroom floor, a customer waiting area. There's no walls. There's no separate room. I mean, it's all kind of integrated. And so salespeople are often, engaging with our customers on a daily basis.
Shane, probably how important is a service drive?
We probably sell about one or two a day from our service drive. And that's not by any design. That's just, like I said, organically it happens, you know. And
walk us through that process, please. I want people, I'm trying to drip as much knowledge, or I'm trying to squeeze you for every last ounce of knowledge you can feed us. How do you maximize the customers that you already have? How do you maximize those service customers? What are you doing to first initiate and then you know, the continue the path of engagement? What are you doing differently? Will you talk to us about that? Lead us down the path. Talk to us a step by step by step, and let's get into that. I want to talk about that.
Okay. Well, there's two parts here at my store. One, we use AutoAlert. That's our a tool that we, you know, and we got a large customer base, as you can imagine. So we open it up to the entire sales staff. We don't try to control it and, you know, give that only to BDC, and, you know, sales staff only has access to their customers. It's wide open for, you know, our sales staff to go in and spend time. Some spend a lot of time, others, you know, there's probably a handful of just, you know, for some reason they're almost allergic to it, you know, but and somewhere in between, they all, you know, the rest of them spend
Hey man, that's not part of the show, bro.
Yeah, it's a catchy little tune. I like it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I can't believe I forgot that. Anyway, so we work it, you know, from a data perspective, you know, or you know, data mining perspective, you know, approach. We work it that way, but you know, one of the biggest key ingredients is don't just walk by customers without, you know, saying something. You're 5 feet from that customer. Stop and take a moment and find out what brought them in. You know, how's their experience in service going? How's their ownership experience with their car? How long they owned it? You know, I mean, some of the basic, simple things, you know, I think a lot of salespeople take for granted. That's something here at our store we don't take for granted at all. We value our customers, we value their experience, and we definitely encourage our entire staff to take a moment and definitely greet the customers as they're walking, you know, to and from whatever the vending machine, or, you know, or back to service for any reason at all. You know, stop and meet them, you know. So, and through that organic process, we sell a lot of cars. I mean, so that's a big part of our business.
Yeah, I love that. I love that answer. It should be very, you know, it should be very natural. It should be a very natural process. Of course. I mean, that totally makes sense. Let me ask you this, Shane. What was the reason why you got on this podcast today? If I had to ask you, look, what was the most important thing you want our audience to know? What would it be?
In a nutshell, I think there would be two things. I'm very optimistic about the future of car. I see a lot, as you said, doom and gloom, you know, on a lot of social media platforms. I see a lot of, you know, a lot of people, you know, are predicting or suggesting that the end of a salesperson's role or the sales manager or finance role, you know, it's coming to an end. We're going to go to kiosks and, you know, whatnot. So I guess one thing is it's really an attitude thing. My attitude is optimistic. Most of us are still doing really well in the business. You know, making good incomes for our families, you know, despite the challenges, you know, I just think it's a wonderful business. I don't know. My message would be that, you know, enjoy it, love it, and have a good attitude, show up with a smile on your face, and, you know, go make a whole bunch of people happy and make good living doing it, you know? Yeah, but I guess the second message is would be, especially for the, if there's salespeople out there listening to this, the art of the sale is not a waste of time. You know, it's not all about, you know, the money always. It's sometimes just about the overall experience and the product and the value at the art of the sale is as important now as it ever has been, you know?
Hey, let me say something, Shane. That is probably, that's the message of the session. I mean, that is, I totally get that. The art of the sale. I love that. I know Herb's going to take us off into the sunset, but my gosh, that's right. That needs to be embraced. This is just the greatest time in our life. I mean, thank you for that answer. That's a great message.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right on, brother. Hey, man. So you know, there's always one question I ask everybody that comes on the show. But before I ask that, I want to ask this question. But we got to kind of keep it a little short because we don't have a lot of time left. But I feel like this is a good question to ask. And it has to do with the concept of, like you said earlier, the sales staff is getting a little bit younger. And it has to do with this concept of millennials, right? So that's a conversation that I have often with the dealers I'm consulting with. Just really quick, man, do you see some major differences with the so-called millennials? And if so, what message can you leave for others in your position to maybe have some sort of takeaway to implement on their end?
Yeah, I think that the big thing is too many dealers or too many managers out there get hung up on trying to adapt to the millennials. Look, they're just coming into life. They're just coming into the whole role of an adulthood and responsibility. It is our job to teach them how to adapt to that world. You know, we wouldn't need leaders, you know, if they didn't need to be led. They want discipline. They want accountability. They, you know, I mean, as long as you do it with care and respect, that it is your job. Or as a leader, our job as a leader to teach them how to be successful. And part of that success is, you know, you got to work harder, you know, you got to work hours. This is an industry where, you know, we're on the consumer's time, which means that you're going to be working more hours than other professions. You know, if you're going to be successful, you know, I see a lot of, you know, ideas out there where, well, you know, can we just, the millennials value time off more than money. And, you know, and this is a business that's driven by money, not time off, you know? And,
right. It can't be done with the, you know, it's gotta be done with, like you said, with like, you know, you got to care about that development and do it in a way that's motivating, right? Because, otherwise, I mean, you make it really hard for them to like you said, adapt, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I just think it's our job to help them adapt to the world instead of trying to change the world to adapt to them.
Well, not to the world, right? Because I think, you know, I'll debate you on that a little bit just because I think that's too much to ask, right? Just to the industry, right? To what they're doing at the store, you know, what they're doing as far as their profession, right? Because they're there, you know. They're giving their time to the dealership, right?
And I guess I meant our world. Yes,
the auto. Exactly. Okay.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, man. Listen, it's been amazing. You know, I always know that it's going to be a good one when the time flies. And this session, I feel like we just started and we're already, you know, almost 45 minutes in. But, you know, there's one question I ask everybody that comes on the show. And that question is, where do you see the automotive industry headed in the next 5 years and why?
All right. Well, I knew you were going to ask this, and I did not prepare. So, yeah, I look forward to a little bit more integration with the variety of platforms that we're using, technologically speaking. As an example, I see kind of an immersion, if you will, of you know, especially the tools that we use, that they're going to be begin to communicate to one another a lot more seamlessly. I know, as an example, Cox Automotive, I know they've been working on this for a while, you know, but, you know, we don't want to have, you know, 20 windows open to do a car deal, you know, have to remember 20 logins, you know. I see that becoming more seamless. I see the same. Your desking tool is going to be the same tool you use for a CRM, what you're appraising the car in. I just see a massive integration of technology, and I think it'll make us a lot more efficient, and we'll be able to save us and the customer a lot of time in transacting deals. That's what I believe.
I liked how you said that you used the word efficient. I love that, man. That's, I think you're right on point there. Hey, man. So... awesome to have you on the show, man. Really, really appreciate the time and the information. I think there's a lot of good nuggets here. I do want to give a quick shout out to Mr. Jay Jensen. I mentioned his name earlier, but I forgot to give him a shout out. You know, it's part of our Dealer Talk tribe. And we had an amazing session with him last year, but it was more focused on sales. So shout out to you, Mr. Jay, if you're listening to this. That's all the time we have for today, guys. Thank you so much again, Shane, for your time. Appreciate it. Looking forward to seeing you, man. Getting some lunch or dinner sometime in the near future, brother.
Yeah, let's do it. Anytime, man. I'm always up for it. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, man. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you very much for listening. And as usual, we'll talk later. You made it all the way to the end. Congratulations. Thank you so much for tuning in. We truly, truly appreciate it. If you like this episode and you think of somebody that can benefit from this information, please make sure to share it. Share this podcast so that they can take these insights back to the dealership and implement on their day-to-day. Thank you so much. And as usual, we'll talk later.